Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's an OmegaCon board game roundup. We're going to talk about all the games we played at OmegaCon, what we liked, why we liked them, and just kind of talk about general mechanics.
We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Play more games!
And Molly Glover.
OmegaCon!
And yes, we are recording at the OmegaCon hotel room.
The Bullwinkle Studios,
yeah.
Not the vaguely racist powwow room that we record in sometimes here. And our guest today is Eric Knight, at Pedantic Eric.
Hi.
Pedantic Eric.
I am back again on this podcast.
Might know him from Fantasy Flight Games or Vilification Tennis or being the concierge out at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Or just being pedantic.
Or from previous Geeks
Or you might know podcasts. Him as just that guy, man.
Like, oh, man. Yeah. My guy.
What the hell?
And so, yes, we are at OmegaCon, the weekend of slacking and maybe drinking and what
maybe
have you.
Drinking.
Maybe.
Well, Tim doesn't drink, so, I mean...
I got water.
Historically, the places Tim has drank has been OmegaCon.
That's true. And so we're gonna...
Historically, this is the only place Tim drinks.
So everyone brings their games to OmegaCon and sets them out on this table. And so it's a great place to try out some new games and kind of learn games with people that have already played them. You know, get that introduction in without just going in to a new game without anyone know, there to kind of guide you through. And so we're all going to talk about some fun games we played this weekend.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a tabletop roundup.
Tabletop roundup. That's all right. Yeah.
That's the sound.
Molly, what did you play this weekend?
All right, so I played a bunch of great games, and the ones I liked the most, I think, are... I liked the game Spyfall the most, just because it's... okay, so what Spyfall is a game of hidden roles.
Like the Resistance a bit?
Kind of, yeah. Like, so there's... there are, I want to say, like 25 locations, maybe 30 locations, and there's 30 little decks
of
cards.
What are some of the locations like, just to give people an idea of?
Movie studio, military base,
circus.
Nightclub, circus, supermarket, airplane.
School.
Passenger train, yeah. So, there are all, for each location, there is a deck of cards. There are 7 location cards and then a spy card, I think, or something like that. And so... The spy card is the one that you can see through the bag, and then otherwise you see card back. So you just pull out a little bag of cards, pop it open, you shuffle them up, and you hand them around the table.
One person, blind.
One person is the spy. Everyone looks at their card, takes a look at it for a minute, and then you just start asking questions of each other. And you need to ask vague questions, because the goal is the people who are not the spy are trying to figure out who the spy is before the timer of 8 minutes runs out. The person who is the spy is trying to figure out where they are.
Because so their card just says spy.
Their card
it doesn't
just says
give
spy.
The location.
Yeah, so, they don't know where they are.
So if you're at the beach and you ask somebody else, hey, did you bring suntan lotion? You just...
It's pretty close. That's definitely a really specific question. There's only so many locations that are outside and that would apply to.
There are a lot of the questions I really liked that got asked that fit for any location, but... The answer given was really a good way to gauge someone was, do you come here often?
Mm-hmm. What time did you get here?
What's your favorite season?
What's your favorite part of the day?
Now, one thing that you didn't mention is that everybody also has a role at the location.
Yes.
Right, I was getting to that. So the people who have roles, people who have the location cards each have a role, a job, as it were, that might be at this place. That's the easiest way to think of it. So, like, at the supermarket, there might be shopper, stock boy, manager, cashier, delivery guy. There could be all these different things. Produce stalker. So you have to answer. You want to answer as your role. So if you're the manager and someone says, "What time did you get here?" You might say, 8 a.m. Or you might say, you know, I work the night shift, or yeah. I never left, or yeah. I feel like I live here. So yeah. you know, and
occasionally there are roles that aren't directly an employee per se. I mean, I had one in the nightclub. I think I was a pickup artist. So
yeah.
you know, I wasn't like a bartender or manager.
At the amusement park, there's kids.
At the beach, I was a thief.
Yep. Well, at the space station, I was an alien.
The military base has a deserter.
Oh, that's great.
So there are roles that are designed and added specifically because their answers might kind of throw off the traditional answer.
Yeah. It's a really fun game. It's made by Hobby World in part and Cryptozoic partnering together. Hobby World is a Russian company that FFG partners with a lot. They, you've heard me talk about the first game I made, Mafia Vendetta, which is coming out early next year. That's a Hobby World game too. So they are really the Hidden Roles thing. They've got great art. Like that's one of the things they're known for is simple, easy, fun mechanics for party games and really good art. Yeah.
And the thing I liked about that game is super fast.
It is.
I mean, you can play if it's like I got because at
OmegaCon, it's never longer than 8 minutes.
At OmegaCon, it's so often that you'll be like a couple of people like, "Hey, you want to play this game?" And you're like, "Yeah," and I'm gonna be done with this game, the game I'm playing in 30 minutes. Well, you can pull out Spyfall, play 30 minutes of Spyfall, and basically be done whenever they're done.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Not quite as fast as Love Letter, but it's easy to pick up and drop.
Yeah.
And if players leave or you add people, there's no additional setup or anything. It's super easy to add and drop players.
It's almost like you're playing rounds more than games because you're more likely to play a few in a row.
And it's 8 minutes?
But you don't have to.
8 minutes. Timer.
Technically, I think you're supposed to pause the timer when you do an accusation. Right. So it could take up to 10.
Yeah, it could. And if there's lots of accusations, we found that the sweet spot with that game is about 5 or 6 people.
Eight gets
cumbersome because you can't really remember what everyone is saying, and you end up just kind of guessing a lot more than deducting.
It's even easier for the questions to go around without somebody getting asked something.
It's if people aren't quick with their questions and they hem and haw and think about it for too long, 8 people is burdensome.
Yeah.
And if you're the spy, you got a lot of elbow room.
With 4 and 5 people, which we played with, it was a tight and very, it's a very scary game. The first time we played, I was the spy. And I can tell you, when it's your very first time playing and you're the spy, anytime you're the spy, it's overwhelming because it's just like, oh my God, there's all these locations. I have no fucking idea where we are.
I've never been the spy.
Really? And so I have been the spy a lot. It just kept happening and I'm not and it's and I hate it. I like it, but I also hate it.
Eric, what did you play this weekend?
I'd like to talk up Codenames, premiered at Gen Con and then hit stores sometime in September, I believe. And it is it was like a big deal at Gen Con, and it's one of the really hot new games.
It's been getting played every day at lunch.
Molly
and I played that at Seth and Lori's wedding.
Yes,
for the first time. Yep.
Yep. And then I bought it because it was so great.
And it's a $20 game. You can play with virtually any number of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, and so because you're just dividing into two teams, and those teams can be fairly smaller or on the bigger side. But you have a grid of 25 words in a 5x5 grid that you lay out on the table, and these words are just cards.
Yeah.
Random, because there are 200 cards, different words on opposite sides. There are 400 different words possible. And the clue givers, each team has a clue giver, and they give clues to the rest of their team, trying to get them to pick the right words that are the code names for their spies.
Because the two people who are giving clues for each team, one red, one blue, they have a setup card that shows red and blue and gray colors on a grid relate to the cards that only they see.
It reminds me of what's the Minesweeper?
Minesweeper,
The Minesweeper, the little click mind game for Windows, whatever. They get this little decoder card that tells them blue team's cards are, where red team's cards are.
Yeah, like the top row is blue, red, gray, red. You know, like in that. Yeah.
So, but the way the clue givers get their people to try and find their words is word association based on the meanings of the words.
One word.
So, for instance, if I want my team,
one word
and a number that you think associates to that word. So, for instance, I'll give you the example. If I wanted them to say hospital and needle, I could say medical. But I have to be careful that there isn't something else that might trip them up. Like, if doctor's also on the board, I have to be more specific than that.
And the number actually doesn't relate to the words. The number is the number of words that you that are on the board that relate to the words. Right. So it's like, if you say hospital two, and that's implying that there are two words on this board that you should guess that are, And that's the tricky part that I love. It's just like Spyfall in that sense of, like, you have to think about what you might be accidentally giving clues to when you're and
there's
and
an aspect
other games.
Of that in another game we played this weekend too, which we'll talk about. But I for Codenames, the one that we ran into was cards on the table included like Centaur, Dragon, Dwarf, and Mountain. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't say fantasy because Centaur wasn't one of the ones, but Dragon, Dwarf, and Mountain were. So I said three, Smaug.
Yep.
And they got it.
Yep.
And that was, so it's carefully editing your hints.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
And figuring out how to pull words together and try and get your team. Yeah. The one clue I've given that I've been happiest with so far in the small handful I've played, I gave the clue velodrome. Mm-hmm. Three. And the words I was going for were bicycle, arena, and France.
Ha!
Oh,
and they got them all. I was so proud of that one.
Yeah, and that's another game. I didn't get a chance to play it this weekend, but I think, you know, you can figure out how to play it by watching one round.
Quickly. Yeah.
You don't even need anybody to explain the rules, really.
Pretty much,
And you know how it plays. It's a quick in and a quick round. I mean, you can play 10, 15 minutes and one round's done and then you can move on to something else or play another round.
Yeah.
Switching players. Yeah.
We one of the things I like about that game is it's very adaptable to house rules, table rules, as it were. Like I've played it at work where we decided, okay, yeah, you can make up a word. Like if you think that's gonna somehow get it to them, you can make up a word. Like, you know, because spoilerific isn't a word, but you know, like, but something or something along lines. Like, obviously not just nonsense, but like if it's like, you know,
and not like combining multiple words into a combo
to
cheat.
But I think one of the words that we had was I think they did table-licious or something like that because they were trying to imply like dinner and tasty and some other things, but. Mm. Our friend at work, Mark Larson, actually made, before the game was available to buy, because they just had a limited number of copies at Gen Con to buy, and he had played it there, he's so good with spreadsheets and programming that he made a game that worked between his numbers spreadsheet on his laptop and an iPad, and so that it showed the words on the iPad and you touched and typed in things on the computer and that talked to the iPad and changed the colors of the words. So he made like a digital version that we played until the game was available. And the number of copies that I think our office has bought has paid for that over and over the time that he did that.
Tim, what have you played this weekend?
Well, I mean, a lot. It seems like we're kind of picking favorites. The game that I played that I guess I'll pick. I want to say this weekend I actually made it my goal to kind of like play all new games.
Yeah,
with the exception of Legendary because.
But we played a new version of Legendary.
Yeah,
we played
but
a
still,
new expansion.
But
Legendary.
I mean, Legendary is like fucking OmegaCon is Legendary.
Well, yeah.
So, anyway, so I played a game called Castle Dice. Which I saw a lot of people playing this weekend. It's a resource allocation game. It's got a nice mechanic because basically, you know, you're trying to gather a bunch of different resources and there are different colored dice that correspond to the resources. So each turn you get a certain number of dice and then everybody rolls those dice and all the dice go into the middle.
Okay.
And you take turns picking the dice from what was rolled.
Okay.
So you have to decide, all right, well, what do I need? Because there are always dice that everybody rolls, and then you get to add some random dice to it. But if you're like, well, I really need the blue resource, and so you grab a couple of blue dice, but nobody else grabbed any blue dice, but that's fine, but your blue dice now go into the middle, and anybody can grab that resource.
Is
and
it then competitive or cooperative?
It's competitive.
Okay.
And then there's other things. You get cards, and they allow you to build buildings. The buildings have victory points attached to them.
Okay.
So that's the major way that you're gonna win.
It's Catan Farkle.
A little. And then it has. Then there are animals, and different animals give you different abilities based on who has the most. So whoever has the most horses gets to go first. Which is a big advantage.
Sure.
But that only works so long as you have the most horses. If somebody else gets more horses, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are also characters that you get that can improve how things work. So, for instance, one of the things that happens when you roll your dice is barbarians come up. If barbarians come up, you have to keep them, and they can steal your resources. But if you hire guards, then the guards can prevent the barbarians from stealing a resource.
Okay, okay, cool.
And the guards work for the rest of the game. So you've got five different resources. If you put a guard on each of five resources, the barbarians can't do anything to you. You've got workers that can produce resources every turn. So if you put a worker on the blue resource, every turn you get another blue resource.
It totally sounds like Catan Farkle.
Or like Puerto Rico.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But with it's a good game. I actually played it Thursday night. I've seen people playing it all weekend.
Yeah.
And one thing I always think about when I'm playing games is like games that I could play with my kids.
Yeah.
And this game, very simple game mechanics, very quick to learn. And just anybody can play.
How many dice come in the pack? Is it a ton of dice?
It's a ton of dice.
Yeah, that's cool.
It might be similar to the superhero dice Marvel game that Mark Sherman was showing us that one time.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a similar kind of a thing.
Nick, what game did you play this weekend that you liked that was new for you? What was your favorite new game?
You know, I think my favorite game was this really silly card game with an equally silly name. It's Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards Duel at Mount Skulls Fire.
It was amazingly fun.
It
is a silly game.
I saw that was on tabletop.
The art is by the guy who did the show Uncle Grandpa on Cartoon Network.
Little Adventure Time.
Which is kind of like Cracked magazine or Mad Magazine kind of like cartoon art style. I think
somewhere between Cracked and heavy metal.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the fantasy weirdness, like gross.
And it's you pick a wizard and who you are matters not at all, but all the wizards have very funny, weird, extreme names like, you know, Faye Twinklebottom, the elf, whatever.
Yeah, I think it was like the girl princess was like Princess Majestica and her Fury Corn. Or no, Princess Birthday and her Fury Corn.
Some evil necromancer looking guy.
Yeah.
And a bunch of silly ones. Lady Laservere.
Yeah, Lady Laservere, the space wizard. Yeah.
Everyone has a hand of cards and starts at 20 hit points. And then there's three different components that spells have. They have an origin, they have a modifier, and then they have a
delivery.
And so you can do one, two, or three cards at your turn. If you put down three cards to make a complete spell, one of each category.
Any combination, but you can't do duplicates of the same category. So, yeah.
Right, so one of each. And the delivery has an initiative on it. So if you play fewer than three cards, you get to go sooner because your spell casts faster. So if you put down one card, you get to go first, usually. Mm-hmm. If you put down two, then...
I assume the fewer cards you put down, the less damage you
have. The less effect you have, right.
Yep.
Mm. So, and the fun part of this is as you're putting down your cards to make your spell, it says in the rules you have to say your spell's name in your best wizard voice.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like, Wizard Beards, Instantaneous Skull Explosion.
Yeah.
And so those are the three components. And
Old Scratches, Moldy Deathnado.
Yeah, those are all actual ones, I think. And,
yeah.
And so the different spell parts have suits, and if you're matching suits, you, like Dark or Primal or Elemental, Arcane. If you're matching suits, then you get more dice to roll on your card's effects if they have power rolls. Mm-hmm. You also get treasure that can modify all your dice rolls and that sort of thing. And then as you eliminate each other, you then pick up dead wizard cards to give you bonuses in the next round. And it's basically first wizard to three times being the last wizard standing is the winner. It's very, very simple. Very easy to pick up and learn.
The
art is just outrageously over the top.
Yeah.
like heavy metal is an apt comparison, but yeah, way more cartoony than that.
The art is cool because so the source cards and then the modifier and the delivery, they all fit together in threes, and they make it's like the character that's originating it is like a narrow beam of like stuff, and then the middle card is a widening beam that matches up to the final card of a full on like explosion beam. Sure. And they're different colors and they have different stuff in them, but like as you lay them out, if you play all three cards, they always make this long, they all match up, the art all lines up. Cool. It's really cool.
It's
good production value. All the stuff is really well made.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just gonna, you know, this is a great plug for tabletop. I mean, I love tabletop anyway, and they did this game on tabletop, and cool. The episode's a lot of fun.
Cool,
because they're having fun with that.
Yeah,
you know.
Everyone, you get into it. You really get it. The I think it's fun to be silly with that game.
Yeah.
Apparently, they made a sequel to it.
Standalone.
Super. Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards 2 Rumble at Castle Tentakill, which is standalone or combined with, like, completely compatible with the original version.
Nice.
And
it's another game I'm pretty sure my kids would have.
Oh, you're
I
love
think,
it.
Yeah, kids would have a great time.
Do we have time to do a, like, runner-up real quick? Like,
yeah,
I think
we each get to pick one more and just very briefly.
Very briefly? All right.
Molly?
I'm going to go with Witness. This is a four-player game, exactly four players, that is a fun... It looks like it might be based on some French comics.
It reminds me of Tintin.
It looks like, the art is a lot like Tintin. So you have, there's all these different booklets. You each get to pick it. You're each playing one character. You each get your own personal clues booklet. Then there are cases and questions and solutions. So someone is just kind of running in. It's like, all right, so we're going to do the case Blood in the Snow. And here's the opening text everyone gets to read. And then you look in your personal book and it gives you a fact. And depending on the order that this piece of cardboard says, two of you are now whispering to each other. So I might whisper to Eric, and Tim would whisper to Tim, or Tim would whisper to Nick. You would tell him the piece of information you have in your book. Then the next round, Eric would whisper to Tim what I told him and what his book says. And then Nick would tell me what Tim told him and what Nick's book says.
Okay.
And then one more time, I tell Eric what Nick told me, which was what Tim told Nick, and Nick's information, and my information, and then...
So at the end, everyone should have all four pieces of information,
but it's telephone.
Filtered through
telephone. Cool. So then you ask questions. It'll be like, okay, so who was the liar? Who stole the necklace? Where is
and
the necklace?
It seems like it's usually some sort of a critical thinking logic puzzle at the end that you have to solve based on the information you're given, but you never know what the questions are going to be or what the puzzle is going to be, so it's hard to know what is going to be relevant.
Yeah.
Or even, in one case, we were told to solve a safe code, and you find out that one of the pieces of information you're given is bunk.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Was a ruse. Like, and so it's super fun.
What is the resolution, though? Like, there's four of you playing.
Yeah.
Are you trying to get the most correct personally
so you
win?
Yeah, you're scoring points based on how many you answer. Every question you answer right, you get a point. And I think it's like the first to you pick a number of points. It's, you know, the first to 10 points or whatever, however long you want to play it.
So you do several cases until somebody hits that goal.
We played it until we got tired of playing it. That's kind of, that's also another one. Right. That's totally good way to play it.
Do you have another runner-up?
Yeah, sure. So I played, last night I played Modern Art, which is a game by Rainer Knizia. Now, Rainer Knizia is a German game designer.
Yep.
He was a math professor, so all of his games are math-based.
He did Ingenious,
the
Desert.
Yeah, he's done a ton of stuff.
Tigris and Euphrates.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a few games that are really, really well-regarded among the top stuff on Board Game Geek. But a lot of them, to be blunt, are math with some thin veneer of theme pasted over it. I mean, it's the way a lot
crunchy
of these games are. Yeah, they're not all super heavy crunchy, but it's math-based usually. So this is a art trading and auctioning game.
Mm-hmm.
And you start with hands of art pieces by five different artists. And you lay down one or two of them, and there are different types of auctions based on the type of card that you're laying down. And so you're getting money from others for the art that you're auctioning to them. Or if you buy the piece of art that you put down, because you can sometimes also bid, you pay the bank. But the key thing is that there are rounds that happen. When any one artist's art accumulates to five pieces, there's a scoring round where the top three quantity on the board get paid out.
Oh my god, this is such a Rainer game.
It is. And then it spills over to a second round. And some of the stuff that has happened before is cumulative as to the values that can be paid out.
It kind of reminds me of that real estate game.
For sale?
For sale.
Yeah.
Description?
It's pretty different than that, okay. Actually. But it's a little more number it's definitely more number crunchy than For Sale.
Cool.
Which
fun.
I love For Sale. This was a fun I'd like to try it one or two more times to get the vibe of it.
Yeah.
For sure.
It was interesting.
Tim.
Okay, runner up for me, Five Tribes. This is another one that I saw on tabletop. It is a Days of Wonder game. Days of Wonder produced Small World. So takes a little bit of time to set up. It's a resource allocation and gathering game. It's one of those games. It's a lot like Seven Wonders in the sense that if you concentrate on only one way to score points, you're not going to win.
Sure.
You've got to balance it out. You've got little meeples, and they're set up on the board, and you move the meeples, and as you move the meeples, you're able to collect them, and different colored meeples allow you to do different things when you collect them.
Okay.
As you clear spaces on the board, you take over that space. Those spaces count for victory points at the end of the game, and there are actually ways to add more victory points to those spaces depending on what each card does. And then it also has genies that you can recruit that give you additional abilities to kind of twist rules to your advantage.
So is it like Five Tribes set kind of in like a Middle East Arabic?
Yeah, it's set in the 1001 Nights kind of thing. So very quick, I think. It takes a little while to learn the mechanic, but once you learn the mechanic, it's really easy to understand. Again, when I look at the game, I think about whether or not my kids will play it. They would totally be able to play this one. You know, Spyfall, I would never play with my kids.
No, I don't think that's... Maybe when they're older.
Maybe when they're older, they'll be able to do deception. But right now, the spy would be picked up in like a second if it was one of the kids.
Spyfall is a game there are people who I really like who I don't want to play Spyfall with.
But it was, anyway, I won't go on. I would say, again,
sitting right here, Nick.
If you want to know more about the game, I recommend going watching it on tabletop.
Sure.
Having watched tabletop, I was able to get into the game super quick.
Cool.
My secondary pick is Mysterium.
Yeah. Yes.
Which
we all played that game, didn't we?
Is Dixit Clue.
Yeah.
So one person is a dead ghost, like storyteller type person, and they have a deck of cards that have weird imagery, like a castle or like a knight chasing someone down a hallway.
They're not even that linear. They're
like,
so
they're not narrative at all. It's just like you get a general sense of something in this card.
And there can be multiple elements in that card, so
colors and different symbols.
Yeah, you don't know if the ghost is like, this is because of the cards.
And so everyone else is a fraud. I mean, psychic. And and they're...
We actually talked about that in the game we were playing. You really are kind of faking it, because you're looking at these pictures like, I don't know, how about this?
Yeah.
So the everyone at first is trying to guess a person. And so there's these person cards laid out, and there's one person for each player, as well as two decoys.
One or two, depending on the quantity.
This is something that wasn't clear to me at first. Each player has, the ghost has a set of person, place, and weapon for each player that ghost is
not
trying to get
everyone,
each player to
each
guess.
Player.
Yes.
Right.
So you have your individual clue dossier, as it were.
So blue is going to be trying to guess... You know, the Scotsman in the pantry with the vase.
Yeah.
But everyone else also has their things they're trying to guess.
Yeah.
And the only way the ghost can communicate to them is by giving them these vague picture cards and hope that they pick up on what you're putting down as far as colors or objects or themes or shapes and that sort of thing.
And it's cooperative, so everyone's talking and helping each other.
It's cooperative up until the very end.
Yep.
And there's a little bit of a sense of urgency, like you have to get it done in a certain amount of turns. And also you can bet on your fellow psychic's guesses every turn to increase your chances of getting more cards at the end to guess the finals.
Yeah.
You know, which one of the scenarios is the actual murder that occurred.
Yeah.
It's very much like Clue in that you're, you know, Colonel Mustard in the ballroom with the candlestick type thing, but then very much like Dixit in that someone is trying to tell you a story or lead you through something with these visual clues And what they have to choose from is very limited because the ghost has a hand of cards that really might not be ideal at all for communicating a message.
I think there's a considerable amount of replayability because there's a lot of cards for like each one of the options.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different culprits. There are a lot of different locations, mm-hmm. a lot of different weapons, which means every time you're playing the game, you're probably looking at a different set of cards.
Yeah.
And that means that even if you played with the same people, even if you played with the same ghost, they can't necessarily give you the same hint that got you to something the time before.
Well, plus it's one of those. It has the unfortunate problem of being one of those games where this happens sometimes in Codenames, where someone will say, "Well, if someone will look at the clue card and be like, oh, I think the ghost is trying to tell us, you know, this particular thing." And it's like, well, if they're trying to tell you that, there's better clues for that. And it's like. Right, but don't get sucked into that trap because they don't. Yeah, and that happens in Codenames. In Codenames, sometimes someone will be like, "Well, if they're trying to get us to guess this and this, I mean, there's way better words they could have given." But which always, if you're the person giving the clue, is like, "Come on, man, I'm doing my best."
Yeah. I think you know, it feels like every year at OmegaCon. I know you know a lot of our listeners aren't here, but OmegaCon's a big tabletop gaming con.
Yeah,
every year there's like a game. That's the game everybody's talking about and everybody wants to play. And this year that was Mysterium.
I knew it was going to be Mysterium because Codenames. I can always tell what games are getting played almost daily in the lunchroom at FFG between Gen Con and OmegaCon.
Talk about after Gen Con.
Even just what they're playing, because talked about is one thing, but if there actually are people who are willing to sit down and play a game at lunch and it's not one of ours. That's always a big tip-off.
And both of those games were among the hottest new releases at Gen Con that people, snapped up.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
So can we do a quick least favorite before we do five questions?
Without describing it, just kind of
I don't know if I have a least, but Molly, did you play anything that was meh?
No, I'm trying to think if I've ever even played a game that I mean, for me, if a game is meh, it's usually because of the people I'm playing it with. And it's not because it's my friend. It's usually it's someone whose play style doesn't jive with my play style. And it's not that they're doing anything wrong. It's just not. I just feel like it's not how I want to play this.
Eric?
No, I enjoyed everything I played. So I don't have. So, Tim, you just go ahead.
I played a game called The Captain Is Dead. It's a cooperative game. Mm. You're on a spaceship and you're under attack by aliens and you're trying to like get your ship mm-hmm. up and running before the aliens destroy your ship. I found it pretty easy. It was like it starts off and you're really hosed and then maybe after two turns, if you haven't been completely fucked over, you can beat it.
Okay.
I just thought it was pretty simple.
Fair enough.
Not the game's fault at all. One of the rounds of the new expansion for Legendary, the Marvel deck building game we played, was brutally bad luck.
It was unfun with the number of the scheme twists came up. Yeah,
just the cards came up so fucking rough that it was a hopeless game from the very beginning. And we played with the exact same circumstances, same people, same everything.
And that's a game that takes a lot of setup. When it's brutal, it's like, huh.
Yeah. And we kicked its ass the second time through. But I mean, that wasn't the game's fault. That was just we got the shaft from luck there.
Yeah. We played another game where we had the same problem, where we got the wrong cards in the HQ, so we couldn't recruit anything because it was all too expensive. And
the new expansion is really hard.
It is hard, but that's good.
Yeah, generally for me, the only things I don't like in a game, I don't like when, I'm not a big fan of when it's either all random. Like, it's just 100% random, and there's no skill base. And that can be fun, as long as everyone's sitting at the table is aware it's random, and no one's going to get their panties in a twist about it being random and them having bad luck. Because, like, nothing is worse for me for playing a game than when someone gets mad that they're not winning, and they've decided halfway through that they're not going to have fun anymore.
And it has nothing to do with skill
and it's
or
like,
choice.
Or even if it does, it's like, man, let's just keep doing it.
I'm like, dude, if I realize I'm not winning, what my goal is to try and screw over somebody else.
It's like,
oh, look, that person's really kicking everybody's ass. Yeah. I'm going to make their job harder.
Sure.
Yep. So, Eric,
you haven't answered the new five questions.
I have not.
We'll do those. Those are OmegaCon board game wrap-up. And now we're going to ask Eric our new five questions. Tim, do you want to start us off?
Sure,
questions.
Eric, what's a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Aliens.
Aliens?
The second one.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, the James Cameron film.
The action movie, not the
action
movie.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, it is so watchable. It's just so, it's a fun thrill ride. There's at least a little bit of layers there with some of the characterization stuff he did with Ripley in that I think really, and the first film was great.
Yeah.
But Aliens is so much more fun and watchable to me.
Sure.
And it's just,
yeah,
it's a blast. And there are a lot of really fun and entertaining lines, fun exchanges.
Cool. Super tense, quotable movies.
Tense moments. Yeah, very, very quotable movies. A lot of tense moments that are built really well.
It's a lot of characters that you give a fuck about, so you don't want them to die.
Yeah.
Which creates a sense of dread in the viewer because you know they're in a really shitty situation.
Yep.
It's
yep.
The power armor and Newt and, you know, get away from her, you bitch.
Yep.
And Bishop the android and all that stuff. Like, there's a lot of really iconic, fun stuff.
Yeah.
That's a good... I like
Alien
that.
And Aliens is one of the best double features
in
terms of film and sequel because you can watch Aliens and you can get Aliens and you can enjoy it.
I like the third one.
But I actually do too.
It's not even about that though. Just the way Aliens flows from Alien, the way if you watch Alien and you see what Ripley goes through in that film, then it informs her behavior in the next film, her response to Bishop, and all these other things that she does. It's not that either one. I mean, I love them both, but I think as a double feature, those are from film and sequel. That might be the best film to sequel flow in
Terminator's
pretty good too.
One and two,
but I would and I think. But the other thing that Cameron did is he took it in such a different direction that he was so far from falling into the trap of just rehashing. It's like, okay, you've got this groundwork, you've got this, all this established. What can I do with it? And he just played with that setting and the ideas.
Yeah.
And did a great job with that.
All right, question two. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
So I have to say two things, but I'll be quick about it because they're related to each other. First one is that a couple years ago, and when I went to Hong Kong and China for work, there's a place called the Ladies Market in Hong Kong, which is literally just a 4-block-long street market where there's no car traffic or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just tent stalls lining all the way down. And I found a wallet there. They have like canvas wallets that are made printed with things like, printed in different currency and stuff like that. But I found this one that was Mike and Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Dressed like the Incredibles.
Huh.
Okay. So it's this weird mashup. And of course, it's not a licensed Disney product by any stretch. But it's just like, oh my God, that's so weird.
That's
and it just entertained the hell out of me. And I bought it and I've used it a fair amount, but I actually stopped using it with my regular wallet because the wear and tear and the discoloration of it, I kind of wanted to keep it. The other thing that relates to that is that many years ago when I was in Germany for a trade show there, for a convention there, there was this booth that had a whole crap load of Disney figures, just little plastic Disney figures. And I found a figure that's at my desk at work of Mr. Incredible. But it's not him in the new red costume. It's him in the old blue and black costume.
Hmm.
But he's not young, trim Mr. Incredible. He's fat and dumpy and sort of slumped over to one side, unhappy.
That's great.
Like an old fat man
trying on the old costume.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's that like
that's great.
Specific little moment of time in the film when he tries on the old costume and is... But
sad.
He's not in shape yet.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great.
And it was just like, holy shit, I am never going to see this again. And I bought it.
Yep.
It's on my desk at work. And
that's awesome.
That's cool. I could, if you want to put it in the show notes, I can give you pictures of these.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
let's do that. Okay.
Question number three is, what supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being do you wish was real?
This is a really hard one, actually. Because a lot of good stuff has been said, and I actually... This is the one I forgot to really think a lot about ahead of time. I guess... You know... If there was... I don't wish there was a God, but if there was some way that there was a God that was truly benevolent and actually would be able to be helpful to people without screwing other people over.
Okay.
In a way, I mean, because there could be a lot of good.
A paradox
there.
God.
Yeah. Well, sure. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that could just genuinely make life better for everyone without it just being a bland utopia.
Sure.
We don't want that either. At least I don't know. I mean, guess it depends on your definition. But If there was some way for something like that to actually make the world a better place for a lot of people, that would be great.
It's like Santa? I mean,
maybe. I don't know.
All right, yeah. Question number four. If we say religion is gone from the world, mm-hmm. what is the biggest problem that we now face?
Income / class inequality.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't just mean within, like, we have got the whole income equality thing becoming worse and worse again in our country, but just in the world in general, there are still
just wealth disparity.
Wealth disparity, because even people in our world, in our country, who are not all that well off, but are at least able to have certain basic needs met, whereas people in so many other countries still struggle with, clean water. Yeah. And
the source of terrorism, energy. You know, since we were recording this and we just had this attack in France, and the source of terrorism
and Beirut,
the source of terrorism, I think, is in a large part due to income inequality, because most of the people who engage in terrorist acts are poor.
Well, and religion preys on that too.
And religion preys on that
part. Yeah.
It's, yeah. I mean, one nice thing to consider is that statistically, over the last 100 years, poverty, people that don't have access to clean water, the basic things that are measurable for determining quality of life, like infant mortality rates, those things are still on the decline. And
everything's getting better. Yeah.
Everything's mostly getting better, and there are people hard at work, you know, with modified food to help people from starving. And, like, I agree with your choice, but I have hope that, like, those are problems that we're working on eventually, slowly.
Yeah.
You know?
Question five. What is your favorite quote?
A lot of people have given really meaningful relatively, but meaningful quotes or, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But fuck that. Aliens, man. Because there are a couple that I really like. Going right back to what I just said about income equality, there's, of course, Burke, I don't know which species is worse. You don't see them fucking each other over for a goddamn percentage. The one I actually quote a fair amount, and I think a lot of geeks do, is that I say we take off and nuke the site from orbit.
So, sure.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most iconic lines from that movie.
It's used all the time.
I think there are probably tons of people who say nuke it from orbit who have no idea it's from aliens, don't even know what it's referring to, don't know that it's a movie quote.
Right.
And that's the, yeah.
My friend of mine who had passed away, his kid.
His littlest daughter.
When he was like 8, five, was standing on my feet and had my hands in his hands, and we were walking around like I was Power Armor at some party, and I was making robot noises. And he's like, "Yeah, let's go to the living room. Okay. So we walk into the living room, and he goes, "Hey, Dad. Get away from her, you bitch!" I was moving my arms around.
It was amazing.
I was hoping you were going to say, "Where do you want it?" And somebody would say, "Bay 12, please."
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was great. Well, thanks for being our guest, Eric, and talking about what we played this weekend at OmegaCon. Yeah,
thanks for having me again.
We're still at OmegaCon, so we might play more games, and we won't tell you about those.
Could do.
We'll see. If you have a new game you're excited about, or if you played any of the games we talked about and want to add your 2 cents, please feel free to leave a comment on our webpage, on Facebook. You can hit us up on Twitter. Like us and follow us on various social media sites.
Do all the things.
We would love it if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Even if it's like a 3, that's cool. Just the number of ratings is great.
Is that your minimum?
Well, I mean, if you think we earned a 2, I don't know why you're still listening.
You probably stopped listening before we got to the part of asking you to rate us on
probably.
iTunes.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, we've been Geeks Without God, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
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 I cast Geeks Without Gods, ad hominem, gore-splosion.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com.
and you can follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
Where do you want it?